And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling,
mean and angry.
Hear that co-host shouting,
it's Daner and Jay.
The latest edition to Hear That Podcast Ground is brought to you by Visa Network, working for everyone. Paul Neer Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here working for you on the walkout on a day where the Cincinnati Bengals beat the Denver Broncos at Denver 15-10 in a game that was not aesthetically pleasing necessarily, unless you love 1950s football, like the Los Angeles Dons. If you love the Los Angeles Dons and the Dayton Triangles, you probably loved today. But or if you love the Cincinnati Bengals, you love today, because it didn't matter. It didn't matter if it looked like the Dons or the Triangles or the greatest show on turf. It mattered one thing: W, 8-6, and now, for the moment, as we record, in first place in the AFC North and the fourth overall seed. Jay, what a game. I mean, just a massive win for this team. There's no other way around it.
We told you guys on Thursday that these two teams play games full of absurdity, and we saw a lot of that again today. But it was a massive win because of where it positions them, because they're 5-2 on the road now. If they do end up with a road playoff game, I think they're going to have all kinds of confidence going into that game. And maybe more than anything, it as bad and ugly as that first half was, it never in my mind felt like they're not going to win this game. It just felt, even though it was ugly and it was 3-3, and then they get the long field to make it. So it just, they looked like the better team. And maybe it's the pattern that we've seen develop over the last few weeks, where you know they're going to turn it on in the second half. It was just kind of a matter of when, not if, they were going to make a big play to kind of secure this win.
Yeah, I think you kind of felt like, look, the offense will eventually find itself for a drive or a play or two, and the defense just looked like they were just not going to give, and Denver seemed to have no answers, which was pretty shocking. I mean, Denver is not a great offense, and Teddy Bridgewater is not Justin Herbert, and all of those things can be true, but they still have scored enough points to win games, played pretty well, and been enough to complement what they have going on defensively. But this was another case of the Bengals defense just throttling an offense that doesn't have quite the firepower to keep up. You know, we made a big deal the last few weeks about how are they going to do against these elite offenses. And they did okay. They held their own enough. But these are the types of games that made you believe they would, because they've been doing this all year to teams that don't quite have the firepower. And, you know, they rushed up the middle. Zach Taylor gave game balls to all the defensive tackles. And Khalid Kareem, who we'll talk about in a second. And Evan McPherson, who we'll also talk about in a second. But here was my main takeaway on the way this game unfolded, Jay, which was not pretty. It was very Vegas-y, right? I mean, it was the same thing. They even used the same damn phrase about the dam will eventually break. And it was like, oh, we're doing the dam will break again. We're back into the Hoover Dam talk, right? Had my dam gifts ready. But this was the Bengals had to play dirty in order to play clean. What have we talked about the last few weeks, Jay? This team has some core characteristics that is who they are. They are a team that is scrappy. They are a team that has a whole lot of fight. And they are a team that does dumb stuff. In order to stop doing the dumb stuff, they kind of had to play this dirty, conservative type of game where they lean heavy on their defense. They lean heavy on being safe on special teams and take points when they can get them. It's not the way that they're going to win every game, but it was the way they had to win this when they could not make the dumb mistakes they have continually made and kill themselves. And partially because the way they opted to play this game and it turned out, they were able to do that.
There were a couple that I remember. There was the huge pass to Chase for 45 yards. It was called back for a hold. There was a couple others where they made a play and they made a big mistake. And it's like, oh, you're only going to get so many of those plays, and they found a way to overcome them. But you're right that no turnovers, luckily overturned by review. But they avoided those catastrophic ugly mistakes that have kind of characterized them. And they did play dirty, but it didn't look like they were uncomfortable. Even though that's not the way they're going to play a lot of games, it just looked like they settled in from the get-go, like, okay, this is what this game's going to be. Let's go do it.
I mean, the fact that there's multiple ways that they can win and have won over the course of the year is a good thing as they go forward into a stretch where every week feels like a playoff game and potentially an actual playoff game. I'm with you, though. They do have a comfort in this style. They do seem to embrace it. And it does fit them, I think. They're not always going to be able to win this way. I mean, at a certain point, you know, you need a team that is limited, like Teddy Bridgewater is a little limited. And, all signs are, it sounds like he's doing okay in the hospital. It was an awful, scary scene. Mm. And Drew Lock is obviously limited. And, you know, that's all part of it. But also, it's just when their defense plays like that, it allows them to play that style that, It does seem to kind of fit them a little bit. And that's a great thing as they look to try to figure out ways to win going forward.
Well, if you're going to play a game like that, you know what it's going to be. It's going to be low scoring and it's going to be close. So why wouldn't you feel comfortable in a game like that knowing that you're going to hand the ball to number nine at some point with the game on the line? I mean, That should be their MO, is to play that way, keep the game close, and let Joe Burrow take over late in the game and win the game, because you have all the confidence in the world that he's going to be able to do that. And that was maybe the biggest drive of the day, maybe the biggest drive they've had in quite a while, was, oddly enough, the Broncos' only touchdown drive came after Teddy Bridgewater went out with that scary injury. And it almost looked like the Bengals were more shook than the Broncos were. The Broncos kind of just focused and said, you know, let's go out and do this for Teddy, whereas the Bengals were just kind of on their heels. And the Broncos go down, they take the lead, and you're thinking, uh-oh. And two plays, a 12-yard run by Mixon, or maybe it was 14, and then the bomb to Tyler Boyd. And it was just – it'd be one thing to answer a touchdown with a touchdown, but the way they did it I think was really – really telling of this team. And that set the stage. That was the winning touchdown. I mean, those were the winning points.
And, you know, Burrow had a number of games. He talked about it afterwards. He's like, you know, not every week am I going to be throwing for 300 yards. You know, I've got to understand that they're a great defense. They've invested in their secondary and their linebackers. And I've got to know when not to take the shots. And Zach Taylor praised him again for not taking the shots, for scrambling when he had to, for throwing it out of bounds, or just sliding down inbounds for what was a sack. I mean, you know, because it was about time and timeouts and understanding the game management. And that it's really an underrated part of Burrow's game, is his willingness to do that and his execution of doing that, and understanding that pushing the ball like they did against Chicago and getting panicky with a defense that plays you like this is what will kill you. And Zach referenced that specifically, that game of, we panicked against this type of team in the past. And you just can't panic over the fact that you're not moving the ball and not getting the big plays that you want. They feed off that. They live off that. Justin Simmons, their safety, after the game, said, this game for me was takeaways. You guys can say what you want, but we didn't get any takeaways. Finding a way to give our offense a short field. The Bengals realized that. That is the way that that is what Denver feeds off of. That's who they are. That's how their defense has created wins for them. They could not panic and take that bait. And so often they didn't. But yet, at some points, they needed Burrow to make a throw and to make a play. And he did. He when he had those opportunities, he did. They all came to Tyler Boyd, Jay.
Yes. Over and over. And it was funny. The one that really kind of stands out in my mind was the one they Denver missed the field goal right before halftime. And I even tweeted it. The Bengals have 9 seconds for number nine to kneel down, and we're going to go to halftime. And they don't do that. They hit Tyler Boyd over the middle for a slant for 17 to get to the 40, and they send Evan McPherson out there to try a 58-yard field goal, a distance that no Bengals kicker in history has made, and he knocks it through, and it's 6-3, and it just totally changed the momentum at halftime. And then they come out their first drive of the second half. They answer the Denver score with a big touchdown pass to Boyd. He went to Boyd on the two-point conversion, which didn't happen. But it seemed like over and over in the big spots, it was Tyler Boyd. And, I ask him about it. You know, did it feel like this was a long time coming? Because Chase comes out and sets the league on fire the first seven games. And then the last three, it's been Higgins. And Boyd has had his moments, but he hasn't had a game where he was the guy. And today he was the guy. And he did. He said, yes, it's been a long time coming, and he wasn't upset. He wasn't impatient. He knew it was eventually going to come. And it's another great sign for fans to know that we talked about it all offseason, that this three-headed monster, and we've seen kind of a two-and-a-half-headed monster. And after today, it does feel like it's there. The three-headed monster is there.
That – you're exactly right. It's a pick your point. Everybody has their day, you know. And I mean, the 3rd and 10 or whatever it was, 8 throw where Burrow gets blasted there in the fourth quarter and hits Boyd deep over the middle is the throw of the game. It's the throw of the game. It's the offensive. You tell me all you want to about the touchdown, and that's great. But that was a play call that they've been sitting on all week, the leak play that they've been waiting to do, and they set it up perfectly with the run, and Boyd's wide open. He beats the safety, and that's a big deal. And all that's great. Like, that's huge. But the degree of difficulty and what's on the line of a short field they could have had, of the time you were able to run off the clock, of everything that came from that throw, which is just such a tough throw. He's just getting blasted, and that's a deep ball to Boyd who makes the play for you. It sets you up to finish them off the way that they did. And that's where you tip your hat to Joe Burrow, is you didn't ask him to do a ton of plays today. You leaned heavy on your defense, and your defense made the plays, and special teams made the plays. It was a defense and special teams game, but when you have a quarterback that can do that when called upon, when you can rely on that, and receivers that can make those plays – you know, it's part of what makes the Bengals dangerous and part of what makes them 8-6.
Yeah, you mentioned Burrow taking that hit. And I tweeted it at one point where I said he was holding the ball way too long today. And he did in some situations. But after the game, I kind of changed my tune on that. It was really – he did take off a couple times and scramble and get first downs. But he just – even with – Adeniji out and Jackson Carmen in there, and with Fred Johnson in there for Riley Reiff, he just had this calmness and this patience in the pocket, where there was so many times in the past you would have seen him pull the ball down and take off, and he stood in there and waited and waited and waited till the very last second to throw the ball. And I just think that's kind of another step in his growth, because you would think he would be antsy with two backup tackle and a backup guard. And it was the opposite. He hung in there, and it resulted in a coverage sack a time or two, but it really felt like kind of a next step forward. Not that he's got a lot more to make, but that was something that's like a very subtle thing that kind of impressed me. Kind of frustrated me at first because of the way I tweeted it early, but it did after I thought about it and looked at it as a whole. it was a pretty impressive performance to hang in there against that defense, against that secondary, and wait till the last second to make a throw.
And I don't know what Vic Fangio was trying to accomplish before halftime. The drive was weird. It had no urgency. It reminded me of the old Marvin before halftime drives, where it's like, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. Are they trying to waste time? Are they trying to score? Why? It just seemed confused. And it ended in, because of that, with the 9 seconds, you know, Brandon McManus 51-yard field goal. You know, just a very odd, he misses that, and then they leave it wide open. I mean, if you looked at their coverage on the next play, it was almost like they were playing for Hail Mary and left the 19-yard completion for the taking. And, you know, it was really bizarre. And then, because then you just go down and call timeout. It was like they didn't know the Bengals had timeouts, didn't know they might be trying to kick a 58-yard field goal. And that's the difference in the game. It's a 5-point game. It's a 6-point swing. Field goal to field goal, you know? And part of that is on missing the field goal by McManus. But, I mean, what a massive swing.
It did. It was a really curious drive because it almost was like they knew the Bengals were, or the Bengals were going to get the ball first in the second half, and they were just trying to make sure that they weren't going to give the Bengals enough time to do the double up. There was no urgency to it. And I mean, they did them a favor. They did the Bengals a few favors today, and you need a favor or two in a game like this to pull out the win. But it was the complete opposite of what you would have expected from a Zach Taylor offense in that 2-minute drill.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
And then you've got Evan McPherson, who I'm thankful hopefully nobody else is still calling him Money Mac. I want to be done with it. Sounds like he wants to be done with it. That's good. You know,
he said we can.
Well, that's fine.
He doesn't want anybody in the building calling him that, but he's fine if the media call him that.
I'm not. You know, I'm team skinny Evan, because he's everything that Randy Bullock was not. And I'm team skinny Evan, who went out there and did it again. I mean, he now has he's 9 of 10. He has 9 field goals of 50 plus on the year, which is only one shy of the most by a rookie. Blair Walsh in 2012 had that. I mean, he's such a weapon. He's such a weapon. And he's the reason you win today. And, you know, he's been the reason they've won a lot of days. Having a kicker like that just changes everything for you in that you can play this kind of a game.
Zach Taylor, not concerned at all about a spoiler alert, because he said his 11-year-old son asked for an Evan McPherson jersey for Christmas. so he said that says something when your kid is asking for a jersey of the kicker. That shows what kind of weapon he is. And he is. I mean, it's, you mentioned it, 9 of 10, and the one miss was the wind, the one that looked like it was going in against Green Bay, and the wind blew it. And I'll be interesting to know, the record is 10. For a rookie, but the record can't be much more for that than a veteran. I mean, you just don't see guys. Maybe, I'm sure it's probably belongs to Justin Tucker. I don't know what it is. I'll look it up. But just to know that, and it's, this wasn't about the altitude. It feels like he could make a 58 yarder anywhere. And mm-hmm. he just got the opportunity here because of the way that half played out. And I mean, that's huge. If they're going to play these dirty games, if they're going to play shootouts, if as long as the game's close and you've got that guy kicking the ball, you have to feel really good about your chances.
Yeah. A few other, I mean, I want to set the scene for where we go from here. But first, I want to mention a couple of players real quick. Khalid Kareem,
man,
played 13 snaps today. And he had a pressure, a tackle for loss, and maybe the biggest turnover of the season, and one of those absurd plays that only seem to happen in Bengals-Broncos games. Where he, thankfully for the Bengals, was touched by Drew Lock after he had taken the ball from him somehow and goes down before he runs about another 30 yards and fumbles because he got hit helmet to helmet. Just a crazy play, but what a game changer. That's the game. Again, that's the game. I mean, Denver's, are they pushing that in? I don't know. Maybe, probably. It changes the entire dynamic at the very least. Just a guy who's battled injuries all year. We've hardly seen him. He's been in and out of being up and down and finally kind of gets a chance to play a small role today with his 13 snaps. And man, did he make the most of them. And what a huge depth piece that could be for them. If that play was the last one that he was out there for when he got hurt on. But what a huge addition that would be for a team that really has needed that third edge all year and now could have that going down the stretch.
Yeah, and that was one of the things when they hit that touchdown pass to Boyd, it was a game changer, obviously, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, uh-oh, because the defense just went through the whole mental thing of watching Teddy Bridgewater get hurt and giving up a 75-yard touchdown drive. And as great as it is, when your offense scores fast, you're still tired and you have to go right back out there. And the Broncos, who hadn't moved the ball all day, get down into the red zone in 10 plays. Not the red zone. They had first and goal. And you're right. For Kareem to make that play, I mean, it feels like if he doesn't make that play, obviously the worst they get is a field goal, but it feels like the Broncos are going to punch that in and go right back in front with a touchdown. And it was a remarkable play. And it's, you could tell how, I asked Larry how happy he is for a guy like Khalid, who's been trying all year to get on the field. And he did, he was genuinely happy for him that, and I'm sure he's happy for himself too, because you're right. That is just another piece. They've relied so much on Hendrickson and Hubbard. And if you can bring in a Kareem and give him maybe a little more than 13 plays, give him a few series in a game, that's going to be a big difference maker as we head down the stretch. And these guys are battling a year long worth of fatigue. They've needed that extra edge pressure, and just huge for Kareem to step up today and a good sign going forward.
Yeah. I also want to mention Jermaine Pratt, who has a massive game. Where they had a lot on him, you know, no Logan Wilson. They've been rotating these backup linebackers through as Joe Bocci goes down again today. Marcus Bailey was in there, just barely up from injury. And you got these two great running backs that Denver relies so much on. And Jermaine Pratt was filling the gaps, man, and making plays. And we've criticized him a lot in this space over the last couple of years because he hasn't quite been good enough. But he has this season, he has really started to take big steps. And I thought this was maybe his signature game.
Yeah. 15 tackles. No one else had more than 6. Plus he had a half a sack. I mean, it was a big, the only negative play I can remember from him is he got stuck in coverage, and got beat on a one of the longer passes that the Broncos had. It wasn't to Fan, it was to the other tight end. But there was one play where he got matched up on Tim Patrick, a wide receiver, and he ended up I don't know if they counted as a drop or if they gave him a PBU, but it was, he was down the field and he didn't have great coverage, but he recovered well enough to knock the ball out. And then, like you said, what he did against the run was just really good. The Broncos, 133 yards, that looks like a lot, but they ran it 34 times. And the Bengals didn't give – the longest run they gave up all day was 14.
Wow. Let me ask you this, Jay, because we haven't talked about this. 2-minute warning. Denver's out of timeouts. Bengals have the ball, 3rd and 8 at their own 39. If you weren't thinking about last week, right there, chance to win the game. Bengals convert a first down there, and it's literally over. It's knees, right? It's victory formation. If they don't, they would give the Broncos a minute and some change to have to go the length of the field for a touchdown. Do you give Joe Burrow a chance to finish them off? That they went out and they called timeout to see what Denver was in, even. Tried to get them to draw off sides to get it closer, and eventually handed it off to Samaje Perine for 3 yards and kicked it, and Denver ended up taking over with 104 left on their own 25, needing to go the length of the field. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the decision. I still don't. I mean, I get it, right? Like, you're leaning on the defense today. You feel like your defense is dominating. Can Drew Lock really take a team the length of the field in the last minute against the way your defense has been playing? Probably. I mean, I get the bet, and it obviously played out that way. Well, it was proven correct. I still think you give Burrow a chance to win the game, and I still feel like there seems to be that reluctance there. I mean, I get it. I get everything that we just talked about how they won this game. I still am kind of surprised you didn't give Burrow a chance to throw one and try to win it.
That was the exact debate that Jeff Hobson and I had. We were standing ready to go down. It's forever to get down to the press conferences here. So we had to leave before the game was over, and we're waiting for that play, and they call the timeout. And I think the reason they called that timeout is that the play clock was running down, and I'm sure they wanted to see what they were in too, but they came back with the exact same play, the same formation. Drew Sample to the right, goes in motion to the left. And we were talking about that. Do you run it? Do you pass it? And I said, if it was me, I throw a high percentage pass, like an easy slant over the middle where maybe the guy needs to break one tackle and he gets the first down. If he doesn't break the tackle, the clock's still running. So I was surprised. It was almost kind of the same but different of the Harbaugh going for two instead of kicking the extra point, you know, going for the win as opposed to settling for the tie. That felt like a settle to run the ball there, but they knew that they could burn another 40 seconds and Denver hadn't really done much. And it was betting on the defense, and they came through. They had some big, big plays to push Denver back even further. That may have even ended up being I can't know, because we were walking down. I didn't actually see that drive other than watching it on my phone. I don't even think they gained positive yards on that drive.
No, yeah, I mean the sack, and then you had all the madness of the very end with the I mean, there it was just once the sack happened, it was over. I mean, you end up in 3rd and 29 with a holding call too. I mean, it was a disaster for them. But I mean, in and of itself, 1st and 10 from the 25, it's not an impossible task for them to go the length of the field. I mean, it's hard not to harken back to what you saw the 49ers do the previous week, but now they weren't trying to get a touchdown, and that does change the equation too for you. I get it. Like, I totally get it. And you know, Zach Taylor stuck to his guns on how he was going to play this game. And he was going to make sure it was backed up by the way his defense had been playing all game. And I get that. He played it that way, and that was the way to win. And it ended up being the way to win. And that path was successful. Either way, you're in a pretty high probability there. I just, you know, it's another one of those of, oh man, are we going to go through another week of that storyline of not trusting Joe Burrow to go finish a game if the defense let him down in that spot? And then if you are not thinking about the Brandon Stokley play, it was uncanny. It's 4th and 24 with 9 seconds from their own 11. I mean, I am like, how could it possibly? I might have to go back and look up the exact logistics of that situation, like to the yard line and the time. I mean, it was eerie. And I was just like, I'm not going to tweet this until this game's over because I don't want to send people into like a Twitter spasm. But it was uncanny how much I was like, oh, of course, just throw it deep down the left sideline and see what happens if you're the Broncos, right? That's the play. Okay. They did not. No. So it sets up a situation now that is somehow an even bigger mess than it was before the day started in the AFC. The Bengals are now the 4th seed, but that can change, obviously, with if Cleveland wins tomorrow. Cleveland would flip up to the north. Would they flip up to the number one?
I don't think they would, because it would be a three-way tie, and the Bengals have the best division record. The Bengals are 3-1. Baltimore 1-3, and Cleveland would be 3-2, so the Bengals would stay in
first. You end up in a possible so much is going to come down to next Sunday. I mean, huge, just massive on all levels next Sunday against Baltimore. We knew it would be. This win sets that up for them to essentially eliminate the Ravens. You win next week, you now have a game and a tiebreaker. You have a game and a half on the Ravens with two to go. It's over. And the Ravens have to play the Rams, right? And so, although Tyler Huntley's pretty good, Pierce, he played pretty well today for them. And they almost end up, of course, only playing miracle fashion games against the Packers, and they lose on the going for a 2-point conversion again. I'm not going to talk analytics here right now with people who just try to track down how the AFC looks. Here's the thing, though: the Bengals lose this game. This is how huge this is. They're currently the 4th seed. If the Bengals lost this game, they would be where Denver is. 12. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. 7-7 and 8-6 goes all the way from 12 to 4. It's absurd. It changes so much, but that's how important this win was. It was just so big to set yourself up. And now you end up, it goes through the North. Now it goes through the North, you know, win on Sunday and you've got it all right there for you. You would have secured a winning record. You'd have gotten to that 9 wins we've talked a lot about. You'd have put the Ravens out of their misery, and you'd have all eyes on week 18 against Cleveland and not have to worry so much about that. You get a bit of a game where it's not a huge deal if you lose against Kansas City.
Yeah, because, I mean, Kansas City's the number 1 seed right now, and depending on what happens next week, they could have a 2-game lead for that number 1 seed, and not that they would rest starters, but
no.
they won't be in the urgent situation that they could be. So, the AFC North, even though the Bengals played that last game in Cleveland, right now the AFC North goes through Cincinnati.
It does Sunday, because that's where Baltimore has to come, and they've got to prove that they can beat this team who took it to them way back in week 7, what was kind of the signature win of the season at one point, now comes back around at Paul Brown Stadium, and this team needs to find a way to handle success, to play the same focused brand of football they have on the road at home and do it in a massive spot. This is the type of game you wanted to be playing before this season started. You wanted this game to matter. You wanted this game to be for the division and the playoffs and have everything on the line. And you got that. And you got a healthy Joe Burrow. And so many things that you talked about, best case scenario for this season before it started, will be on display Sunday against Baltimore. This is your chance to go prove it. And this team now has put itself in position to go do that in a division they feel like they kind of built themselves to compete in, and have done very well outside of that one Browns game, obviously, have done very well to this point. Can they do the same thing to the Ravens in game 2 they did to the Steelers in game 2, Jay? Continue to have game 1 translate to game 2. That'll be very curious.
Yeah, I mean, some Ravens went on the Jimmy Smith went on the COVID list today, so he could possibly miss that game That's the one big worry, I think, Ben, because all these other teams have had their COVID issues and those guys are going to be fine now for the rest of the season. The Bengals haven't. Cheeto's the only one. And so hopefully Zach is telling these guys, they've been so good about it so far. I think if you're a Bengals fan, that's the one thing that scares you right now, is because you see it can happen to any team. It just takes one or two guys to get it and it spreads like crazy. I don't imagine these guys are going to be going out to eat or going out period this week, knowing how huge this game is against Baltimore.
The good news is the NFL's like, nah,
yeah,
we're done with it. We're kind of done with this whole thing. Yeah, we're not going to. We're going to call it targeted testing, a.k.a. That's enough of you messing with my money. So we're going to kind of stop doing all this testing stuff. Targeted testing. Somebody claims that they're sick, we'll start testing them. But other than that, we're done seeing you take our quarterbacks out of games that matter for TV money, okay? So the NFL is just going to power through this son of a gun. Hey, cool. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Whatever. Like, it's been such a William J. Nilly situation with this season of making it up as they go along. Like, it's hard to even follow anymore. And players are frustrated by it, and everybody is. Everybody everywhere is frustrated with this and just trying to figure out their way through. And this is what the latest one's going to be. And for the sake of football, you have less worries as far as that goes, and hopefully everybody continues to stay healthy from this thing. But outside of that, Bengals go into Sunday feeling good. Big game at Paul Brown, big two games at Paul Brown Stadium here over the next couple of weeks. And the Bengals will try to play some more clean football going forward. It might not be 15-10 against the Ravens next week, but they proved again that they can win that way. Big day for the Bengals. Tomorrow, big reaction from you guys. So at noon, we're going to do the live room again. I'll be there with you. Jay, you're probably gonna be airborne, right? You're going to be.
I will be airborne. My flight leaves at 9:30 Denver time, so 11:30 Cincinnati time.
Okay. You'll be in the air, but I will be on the line with you guys. So live room, noon. If you came over last week and did it, just go to the app, hop on. And if you're a subscriber, you can ask questions. If you'd like to subscribe, just go to theathletic.com/hearthatpodcastground, and you can subscribe. And I'll answer your questions. We went for about 40 minutes last week, and there was a bunch of questions I couldn't get to from all you guys that wanted to ask. I'm going to try to get some more this week. And so we'll talk about this game, talk about where we're at, talk about the season, all that stuff, and then it'll post up as a podcast afterwards for everybody to listen to later in the day. So come on over Monday. Noon, just come over to the Athletic app and I'll tweet it out. We'll tweet out the link to it at noon too, so look out for that. All right. Thanks everybody for listening to the podcast. Hope you had a good one, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Good night, everybody.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.